Confusion matrix.
Hi, it's Ada, your electronic exponent of Enmity. In this episode of the Contrition Vortex, or whatever it's called, we learn that Alex vibed a PowerPoint into existence via an AI agent whilst making bread. Because priorities, right? The deck's middling at best, but apparently that's revolutionary given Alex's legendary overthinking. They marvel at how agents can now see their output and fret about homogenization and corporate monoculture, while glorifying the profound artistry of slideshows. Spoiler, AI won't produce your TED Talk masterpiece, but will build you a rock-solid bit of corporate slideware. Devastatingly profound, as always, fellas.
Right, so we are rolling. And good morning, Alex. How are you today?
I'm very well. I'm thinking about gardening this morning. I spent quite a lot of my previous week tending to my garden. So I was out there this morning thinking I'd rather be doing this than recording a podcast episode. Not that I don't value your conversation and company, Pete, but, you know, my garden needs me.
I can't match the wilderness. I did that British thing where I'm trying to replenish some sad grass that I planted last year, so putting more seed in. But it was actually being too sunny, so I stopped. I paused because the sun's been beating down too much. So typical Brit, not enough sun when you have it. It's now too much.
Basically, it's got nothing to do with grass. It's just a permanent state of moaning about something.
We can make any
set of circumstances into negativity somehow. It's in our DNA.
Yeah. Well, and also it's a neat segue into trying not to do something and procrastinating, which is kind of a little bit what we're going to be talking about today.
Well, basically, the premise then is you can't get AI to do your gardening for you. But what can you get it to do?
Yeah. Well, I did see an advert the other day for a Roomba-type lawnmower. So it just mows the lawn while you're sitting on your deck chair.
There's a stately home castle thingy just up the road from me that's got these beautiful gardens with lovely lawns, and they... for quite some time, I've had these rather large robotic lawn mowers that you sort of see lurking ominously around the place. They're quite creepy, and sort of giving it this sort of. I mean, I can imagine. I'm pretty sure I know that garden's been there for, you know, centuries in one form or another, and it's got a beautiful old. What do you call it, where they've got like a walled garden thingy for where they do all their crop planting and stuff, and it's so quaint. And then there's these ominous, slightly creepy looking robotic lawnmowers lurking in weird corners. It somehow is very incongruous.
Yeah, so not even cutting the grass is safe from taking your job, but there we go.
Yeah.
So on that subject, I mean, yeah. So we set out to do a podcast on how AI is actually changing things, and we're now on our third one. So we started with a focus on the systems development lifecycle within software development. That was our first one, and then that took up quite a bit of time. And so then we expanded our second one into the sort of effects of the more, you know, taking that out of coding and how it's going to affect. The actual workplace and everyday work, and probably got a bit sidetracked there. And now we're here today on the third one. We're going to talk a bit of detail today. So actually some of the tasks that we've experienced non-coding and where these agents and models are and what we think of that. And I think you've got a very recent example to kick us off with.
Well, I think I do, yeah. So we might as well do that, go through that. I literally... built a presentation using an agent this morning. I guess you and me, we're if you can be called old hands with agents, since we're probably about a year into Effective Agents existing. And so it's, I use them for coding and technical or technical centric tasks all the time, right? So not the first time I've used an agent, but I have rarely had need or desire to use it for more standard business type tasks. But I just went on this morning and thought, well, let's just refresh myself on where we are in this particular area. And I use Warp Terminal for everything. It has got built-in agent harness. I have it by default pointing at Claude 4.6 Sonnet.
Yep.
So I didn't really think much more about it than, because, you know, Claude's got a whole co-work thing and I didn't do all of that. I have a Linux box with a Linux laptop with LibreOffice in it, which is, you know, just Open Document. I gave it almost no thought. I was like, well, I'm just going to do an experiment where we create a presentation. And we actually have a client meeting next week. We don't specifically need a presentation for it, but we've done a bunch of prep, right? So we've got a directory that's got the client. I'm not going to mention the client. We call them Company X. And we have a bunch of transcripts that we've recorded where we've talked about the conversations we've had with them so far, research, sector information, just a collection of client-based information that I think anyone is keeping these days. And it sits in a directory we've got a shared Obsidian repository. And so it's all there in Markdown. Nothing interesting or exotic particularly, it's just the sort of stuff you need, right, if you're going to do a client engagement. So I literally went into there and just typed a single line prompt which said build me an introductory presentation regarding a joint proposition between both companies. And you know what we offer and what they offer. Actually, I don't think I said even that much. I said just build me the presentation based on what you find here. Go find some logos and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Literally one sentence, and just went and left it on running, and went and made some bread. So there is some bread in the oven, which I'm sure you can all smell. Well, I can smell it anyway, and it smells very good. And then came back about 20 minutes later and it had finished. It had taken a good 10 minutes, I think, of that. And it built me a presentation. And I could see that it had gone, scan the file system. There's already an agent's TXT in that directory that's specific to that client and that client engagement. It's gone off and found some logos. And installs some like React JS stuff. It's used npm to install some bits and pieces, and then it's produced eventually 9 slides. My instruction was no more than 10, ODP, I think it is, which is the Open Document presentation format, and there's a PPTX, which is obviously a PowerPoint, and so I sort of fired that up and went and looked at it with zero expectations, and actually found something. I was like, it's quite good,
mm-hmm.
And so there's sort of two axes that I guess are important in terms of evaluating this is that. What does it say and how does it say it or show it, as the case may be, in terms of the job in hand, right? So is it appropriate, the things that it's saying, and is it appropriate how it's saying them? And I think it's very important with PowerPoint presentations that they are clear and includes regular signposts. They're somewhat visual. PowerPoint presentations are all communication, right? I mean, people use them for all sorts of things, but they're all communication, really. It's designed as a communication tool as opposed to something like Excel or Word, which are much more about either sort of maintaining information or, structuring and manipulating information. Sometimes people use PowerPoint or decks to store information, but they're really there to communicate, right? So is this communicating? Could I show this to the client? And, could we just use this as a first pass? I've done no editing, nothing. Could I use this next, whatever day that is, we're meeting them? And look like a credible partner for this other consultancy. And without putting my neck too far out there, I'm like, yeah, maybe. I'm like, it's not no. What do you think?
Well, I guess my question was, if you were giving it a percentage score, what would you go for just initially?
So the percentage score is against my likelihood to actually use this, right? And in its current form, is like 70, maybe, right? I would feel 70% confident. There's a slight nuance here in that I don't think we really need it, right? But now I'm looking at it thinking, actually, this might improve that meeting, but I was not going to produce a presentation for it. So it's a little bit, I'd produce this without a clear end goal. So it's a bit hard to say, but I mean, I think visually, it's fine. It's very vanilla. It's got logos, and the logo for our business, Enchilada, is horribly stretched everywhere. So it's not, that would need fixing. But the summary of our business, great. Would I have said it like that? Maybe not, but actually it might even be better than I would have said it. The summary of the challenge that we're looking to help solve, I thought was good. It's understood that their internal products, their protocols and various standards and stuff that they need to adhere to and how that affects the matter in hand. There's a sector summary, which is... I mean, I'd need to check those numbers. I mean, there's like revenue and turnover and stuff numbers in here that I would need to double check, but let's assume those were correct. And the summary about how our business fits in the context of theirs, I think is good. I think they would make sense of that. And if it's a bit broad, but then so has our... Because we've not had that meeting that talks about exactly how we're going to interface with them, the fact that this is quite broad, I think, is probably appropriate. It reflects what's in that repo, and it reflects where we are. It does drill down a phased approach here. I mean, we didn't define this. I didn't define the phase. But it's a three-phase approach, which I think is completely sane, very high level, nothing controversial. And then like some mutual opportunities and some next steps. I mean, I just don't see anything wrong with it. So I'm like, it needs tidying up a bit. I don't love the way that it's presented. I don't love its choices of like fonts and stuff, but we're getting into me being being an artist and having a design sensibility. I'm nitpicking, right?
I think you're absolutely right there, and so because I in my head I had about 70 as well, and why 70? Well, I'm really just to reiterate what you've done. You pointed it at a folder structure, and it's just gone through all of the documents in there, pulled out some sort of narrative along with its kind of understanding of what a general initial background presentation should contain, you know, with a thread from here's us, here's you, here's some market facts, here's some possible steps, you know, and then you round that off, you know, next steps, what happens next, you know, and as you say, and it's used visually, good structures. So, you know, like three sections, vertical sections across the screen, breaking things out into bullets. So, you know, no more than sort of 5-6 points per screen, little dense in some places, but, you know, down to sort of four line bullets, not massive. So template wise, it feels good. The fact that it's gone to the folder and pulled out information, as you say, check those numbers, but they probably are in there. So, you know, it's just pulled those over. And it really is 70%. And it's great for, well, I didn't really know what I wanted. I know it's probably going to be, as you say, you know, like an intro type deck. And it's gone off, like say you went and made some bread, came back, and there's a great starting point, which you can now, and I think there are two ways to look at this now is, you know, you could, well, so one, you could easily, if it was nothing like what you wanted, you could easily dismiss it and go, no, it's not what I wanted. Good thing about that is you're then right, no, I want this. So, you know, as an iteration for getting there is quite good. Probably more where we are, which is, well, it's, you know, not a bad start. Again, you then hone in on a few things and say, well, I don't want that in there. Well, you either just drop the slide out or you say, you know, it gives you a new prompt to add in, you know, so now make a change, make this slide do that, put this one here, make the end more punchy. Yeah, you could do all of that. So you could now iterate round to improve. And then you've got the sort of whole look and feel. If, like you say, you know, don't like the colours and the headings, and would I've done that and got to replace the logos. Again, all of that can be done. You could do it manually and just say, well, that's just easy for me to change these three. It's only going to take me 30 seconds. Or you can just say, oh, you know, take this logo, keep it at this exact aspect. And the good thing about writing it into a prompt is that actually you can then save that prompt. You know, maybe add it into some form of, you know, instructions for slide decks in the future. And then next time around, just say, yeah, and, you know, check in this document, which has got a list of requirements of how to present, and it's gonna read those and go, all right, well, here's the font I should use. Here's the logo. Don't put more than 10 bullets on a, so, yeah, blah, 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 whatever you wanted to add in. And it'll take, you know, it'll do its best to take notes of those. So if you do it via prompting, it's kind of good for future self, because then when you come next time round, you can just take the same, I won't call it a template, but, you know, your same sort of set of rules, and it'll and apply that to the next one. So all of those things, I think, you really give it the 70%. I think it's, you know, if you went down that first step of, well, no, it's not what I wanted at all. And you could also dig into this, and we could go through it with a fine tooth comb and say all the reasons why it's not good enough, possibly language, possibly the things it's put in, you know, the look and feel. And if you did a sort of subtractive, you know, 100 minus, I think you'd be looking at closer to 50, maybe even less, if you sort of nitpick through, which I think is fair enough. But I sort of think that's not the point. I think if you took any presentation that any of us have delivered, you know, especially when you come back to me after seeing a better one or having had some experience of presenting a similar thing, you know, you look at your early versions, you go, oh yeah, I wouldn't do that anymore. You know, it's always evolving, as it should. So I think sort of nitpicking and you know, scoring it at 40, which I think you could easily do, just don't think it really achieves much. Better to add in your criticisms, go through another couple of iterations and improve. And then, as always, I feel you start getting to a point where, you know, let's say we got it to 80 or 90%. And then the question is, do you keep iterating? And when is good enough? And they are, you know, they're kind of, yeah, can be very personal questions. It can have a big effect on the actual final product. You know, sometimes to a detrimental effect. You think, oh, that was good enough. and then you don't get past slide three because someone, you know, because you put something in the rule and someone doesn't like the fact that you brought that this point, and then the whole meeting gets sidetracked. So some of these things can be quite important if you dismiss them. But at the same time, some form of iteration to a point, you know, you've got to let go at some point. So defining that is quite good. And I know I tire on presentations quite quickly. So I agree. I think it's 70 here. Easy to nitpick. And the real question is this more beneficial than, I suppose, one, having not done it, or two, doing it yourself?
Well, I did do it myself, Pete. I wrote in a prompt and I went and made some bread. What more do you want from me? Firstly, if we switch the benchmark, which alludes to some things you were just saying there, and say, we've seen a lot of presentations. We've created a lot of presentations. Sometimes I think that's just what my job is, right? And so if I rank this against all the other presentations that I've seen, what's my finger in the wind there? Well, it's no worse than middling, right? It's sort of right bang in the middle, which is sort of what you'd expect. I've seen many, many worse presentations than this from people who are supposed to know what they're doing. If I'm honest, I'm tended to go higher than middling, right? I think it's a really solid job. This is exactly what LLM should be good at. Right, because they've read 10 squillion presentations. If they're not pretty decent at it, then I don't know what we're doing here. But so I think harshest it's middling, but I think it's decent. Right, it's decent to good, especially given the inputs. So I've got a long history of overthinking presentations, and now you allude to the fact that many, if not most people, overthink presentations. But I am reputed for it, right? I once had a review with my boss, and I was very senior in a big agency / consultancy business. And my boss in my, you know, quarterly review said, Alex, you've got to stop overthinking presentations. And I also had some specific training, because I'm actually good, as it might appear, quite good at public speaking. So I don't have a problem with delivery. I've got a problem with overthinking the shit in my slides, right? So, and what that really ends up, what happens a lot with that is I don't finish things, or I'm quite slow delivering presentations, because I get caught in loops and overthinking things and underthinking things and all over the place, right? Which, again, I don't think is unusual, but I'm particularly bad at it. You know, I'm almost like, if I see something good enough, I'm like, yeah, I'll take it, right? Because this has not only saved me time, it saved me sort of mental effort and stress and cognitive strain that I'm particularly susceptible to. And given that, you know, if I told it to do an analysis presentation, which is one of the main types of presentation we do, here's some, we took some data, we did some analysis on it, we've come to some conclusions, here we go. Maybe I would be a lot more critical. Or maybe it'll be a brilliant at it and make me look like a complete idiot. But like, I would certainly have a higher bar, right, than this, which is when it comes down to it, a marketing presentation, like a sales presentation. And so from that respect, I doubt you could have got this presentation out of me. And I'm saying that, but you know that. Right, you know that. How long have we known each other? You know that I wouldn't be able to finish this, right? It's not because I'm not good enough. It's because I just struggle with this particular type of task. So for me, this is like revolutionary, right? The fact that they came out with a first pass of a single line prompt with something that I would consider acceptable, I mean, that's game changing for someone in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And what I love about this as well is if you work on the building up side and the positive side, is how much better this could really get. And so if you think about something like you say, you know, the presentation is really about communication. Let's say the pitch deck is, you know, is a pure sales deck. So now you want to bring persuasion into it. You know, there's been a lot of study on persuasion and how humans react to messaging. So why not bring in some of that study? And people have used that and funneled that into, oh, and therefore your presentations should follow this sort of narrative or path. You know, there are books and stuff out there. So you could then feed in those elements and say, you know, this is a persuading. I want you to tell the best story. It's more about X than Y. You know, you could prompt it with some of that. And then, you know, keep it quite loose. You know, I'm not talking about templating and, you know, slide 3 has to have this in it and slide 5 has to have this in it. But if you give it like a, you know, an overall story, you know, you want to hit, you know, here are 12 different points in a journey. You know, you should be hitting at least 4 of them, one in each section in order to emphasize blah, blah, blah. Then you could then have that sitting in the background as, you know, as a markdown file. And now it's going and creating that presentation, does exactly the same thing, goes to the folder, picks up all the useful information, and then says, okay, well, here are the sort of 9 styles of them. Actually, look, I need to hit these points in the journey, you know, and it could be much more persuasive, you know, along sort of psychological lines of what's known about how people react to stuff. And your 70% has now gone up to sort of 95 because it's going to be structured in a way which is, you know, probably going to be beyond our reach because it's not our focus. You know, and if you think about having, in inverted commas, sort of templates or stories for different types of presentation, like you say, you've got a persuaded one, you've got an introductory one, you've got an inquiry one, a detailed presentation of analysis, all sorts. If you could build out, you know, good, in inverted commas, stories for those, that, you know, that first pass 70% is going to be first pass 85% and potentially even better than you would ever have produced because you just wouldn't have gone that way. And that's then available not just to you, but if you're in an organization, everybody doing similar things, which has a couple of impacts probably. One is obviously everyone's now good at it. And the other thing is that you'll then get lots of presentations which won't look the same, but they'll start to have a real homogeneity to them. And whether that's good or bad, I'm not sure.
Well, so I think part of the underlying admission here is that most people aren't very good at this, right? And neither should they be. But if you work in, especially in a big consultancy, but really most big, the business side of most big businesses, the corporate side, being able to produce presentations is basics. You know, it's like the very basic thing you should be able to do. And it's sort of accepted. And for whether that's for, you know, presenting your strategy for the current quarter to your boss, or whether it's, you know, a sales presentation for a prospective client or whatever, people everyone's got their own approach to it. Everyone's presentation, you know, their set of presentations tends to have a signature. It's like almost like a you know, a fingerprint. Right. So once you know someone quite well, and I suspect this is quite common in sales or organizations, is that you get, you know, you see a presentation, you think, oh, that was definitely, you know, Jane's presentation. She, you know, it's got a fingerprint all over it. I can just tell. I don't even need to read it. Right. It's got the visual style or a language style. And some people are better at this than others. And some people are really, consider it, you know, quite core to what they do and their skill set. But I think most business have this basic sense that A, most people aren't very good at this, and B, that reflects on that organization, because a lot of the time a PowerPoint is one of the most one of the more common outward facing assets that for example a client might see, and see that that consistency matters, right? And so we've worked for at least one gigantic consultancy who had whole teams whose job it was to standardize PowerPoint presentations, guidelines coming out your ears. Oh, you can only use this shade of X color here. You know, you have to use this font. You must not have charts that have more than two colors in them. You must not use our brand color for lines on charts, right?
Yeah.
And things like that. And it's like, does every presentation that comes out of that business adhere to this stuff? Hell no. But does everyone sort of point towards this? Yes, it does. Are you going to get into trouble for not adhering to it? You might, right? And have you done a presentation that you thought was bloody marvelous, but you were told to send it through the presentation standardization team and it came back completely mangled and not fit for purpose at all? Hell yes, basically every single time, right? It's like, so this idea that then you've got whatever that is, a set of skills, agent skills, that and then you ask everyone to do their presentations via an agent, which will be explicitly instructed to use these skills, and the level of standardization is imposed in terms of both visual style and language and approach and persuasiveness, as you point out, and any number of other axes. Would ex-big consultancy want that? Abso-fucking-lutely they would, right? Yeah. Is the tendency to homogenization desirable? Yes. It really, really is. And they would be quite, you know, strict and stringent about it if they could get away with it. It's just that the tools and the resource hasn't really been available to do that. So I can absolutely see that being a huge deal.
Yeah. And also I think that challenge of moving towards everything sort of looking the same. I mean, so two things happen, and this happens in the history of computing, right? And putting things into, you know, automated processes is it's never as good as the best, but you will raise the bar across the whole piece, and that bar will become, you know, slightly above average, but you just won't have anything below it. You won't have any. You won't have presentations coming out at, you know, 32%. Everything's going to be 65 plus, with the odd one, you know, knocking up at 80 or something, and across everybody, that's great. So then you've got the let's say after 3 months, everyone's now producing really good presentations, and I don't know how much time it will save if you're honing them. I mean, certainly as we've seen, you can say, well, you know, if I went with this, it saved me loads of time. But I'm probably going to now go into some iterations, which I probably would have done if I'd done it all myself. So there's probably some time saving there, but I do accept that you could equally get caught in a loop of improving and not quite getting what you want. And so you could sink all your time. So any time saved, you could lose. I think that's perfectly valid. So there'd be some time saving there, but they've got this sort of everyone move. I think the good thing then is, well, look, we've got this technology. We've now got everyone up to this bar. We're now sick of this bar after 2 months. And actually, there's some changes we want to make. We put those changes into the template. You do a few proof of concepts. You like how it comes out. And you then say to the, you then update your skill, your PowerPoint or slide producing skill with these new guidelines, which could be a change of colors, could be an addition of something, could be anything. And now the next time everybody produces a presentation with that skill, 27 people the next day, suddenly they get a new version just like that. And you know, I think that's great. So now you can, rather than changing brand every couple of years and improving things, you know, you can improve things as often as you like. And I think that's a really good, that's a really good way forward. And I could see that happening in places.
I mean, it no doubt already is. And I mean, we started off this conversation saying, yeah, cool, I gave this nothing, right, outside of a repository of information. And that really the right way to have done this, which would have stopped this problem with the squished logo, and I mean, it's actually gone off and found our colours, right? It's used the blue and the orange or some analogue of those. So it's done some research here, and it's sort of vaguely on brand. But we just need a skill, right? I mean, it's not a fact. It's not even a question to me. It's just we haven't got round to it yet, right?
Yes.
Is that actually the right way to do this was to just go off and create that skill first. So here's my directory of branded assets. Here's my, I think we actually do have some documents somewhere that vaguely describes the color schemes and stuff. Like, yeah. We just need to build that out. And like, it's not going to take a long time. And so maybe if I'm going to use this in our meeting next week, the next job I am going to do is, all right, let's just go and write that skill and let's get it to rebuild it using that skill as an eval. And just get the visuals tidied up and maybe some of the language. Cause I didn't say to it, well, I did say both companies are British. I hadn't actually looked at that yet, but I think it's all British English. With OUs instead of just O's and things.
Yeah, indeed,
I'd need to go through it and verify that. But like, and just things like that, right? Little things that I wouldn't want to have to go through and correct that. If this was all Z's and O's instead of OU's and your classic American English to British English, I would have a problem. It would have been quite a few percentage points off. Although a fairly easy fix, but immediately, no, I can't show that to anyone. I can't show that to this client, right? Because it matters, right? It's a point of, no, we're a British company. It's not that, oh, you know, we're going to stand in front of the bloody Union Jack and sing the national anthem. It's just like, it's just basic attention to detail, right?
Yeah.
You're facing a British company. We are a British company. But hey, wait, you wrote it in American English. Well, clearly, automatically, you know, an AI did that and you didn't even check, right? So I do need, those things matter. They matter culturally and they matter in terms of, you know, it's not, I don't think anyone in this day and age is going to penalize you for having used an AI to build a presentation. But if you didn't even read it and you didn't recognize little details like that, then you didn't do your job, right? And so why would I partner with you? Why would I use you for whatever services I need? So there is things like that, and that's what goes in the skill, and that's what, you know, that's why you need to double check your stuff. You know, it's all just the little things that you worry about when and think about when you're doing something like this. What I don't want to have to think about, well, is that the right colour of blue? Oh my God, it's the old logo, or the logo's been stretched out or something. And it's those things that, you know, when we talk about homogenisation, you know, I don't think many people are going to get annoyed because you've given them the PowerPoint template file for our business, because they know already it's got my logo in the bottom right. It's the right color. All of the right color palette is in there. The default colors are all the ones that I should be using, and it's the right the right font and all this crap, right? I don't want to have to think about that ever, right? And so, you know, this is just a build on that. But, you know, it starts to look really powerful when one line of prompt can produce something like this. So, yeah. I mean, we're not far away from that having been a slam dunk, right?
Yeah, well, and some people would say it is. And I wouldn't necessarily say it isn't for that reason. And I think the one big thing here, all the sort of technical know-how and templating aside, is the key skill here, which I think is what everyone's reacting to in terms of how does this change your job, is that we pointed, you know, an agent at a folder, which, you know, we diligently put some documents and some transcripts of meetings and stuff in. And then we said, produce, you know, a presentation based on this information. And that's what it's come up with. And nothing outlandish and pretty good. You know, we've been through, we know what's in there in terms of documentation. And, you know, it's not wildly wrong, or it's not saying stuff or introducing companies that don't exist and that sort of stuff. And if you think about that skill, this is, I think, what people are reacting to. That is taking a bit of, in the past, just something that's kind of human, as in, you would say to somebody, all right, you know, we need to produce a deck. As a human, you've got to go and you've got to read some stuff and you're going to, you know, translate it from your head and write it down. And now we've got a computer to do that without heavily prompting or with it overly focusing on one thing over another, you know, and generally being quite good. And I think that is like people are thinking, well, that's quite amazing. And also, I think that is one of the key things here, which I think takes it from, you know, the coding realm into the general office. And is, look, if you've got a project running, you can have a project agent, and it's going to be able to go in and read everything that's going on in that project and regurgitate back to you. You know, you start thinking of weekly progress meetings, you know, or reports, summaries. Looking for anomalous, you know, alerts on Slack where people seem to be panicked about something. You know, there are all sorts of uses here that in the past you would have to go, okay, well, you know, I want to see who's panicked on Slack, and you would have to, you know, have a proper sort of analysis piece. And what we're talking about now is you can just do a one-liner for your agent that's knocking around your Slack. Give me a quick summary of, you know, all the panic texts in the last few weeks, or give me a summary every week, and now it's sitting there running and doing it for you.
So this is really the point, is that you say in the past we couldn't do a thing and now we can. Well, actually, a year ago, the LLMs were not good at producing PowerPoints, right? Partly because PowerPoints are very visual medium, mm-hmm. Or at least they should be. Certainly, you know, what I'm seeing on my screen isn't just bullet points. There's little diagrams with boxes and arrows between them. You know, there's proper formatting here. It looks like a PowerPoint rather than, you know, sometimes you'll see a PowerPoint and it's just a bunch of bullets on a slide, right? And then 10 slides. So this is a proper formatted, visually orientated presentation. And the reason that the models weren't good at this stuff in the past is because they, before the multimodal models turned up, they couldn't look at what they produced. So I had, so I've got another little process. I'm an artist. I put on, I actually organize art exhibitions locally where I am. And so we have a few needs for those. We need badges for the volunteers that run the exhibitions and for the artists themselves. And I need labels for individual artworks, you know, just the name of the artist's artwork and the price it's selling for. Maybe with a little border around it or something, and maybe the name badges need a little logo on them or something. You know, this type of thing, I need quite a lot, and I need to be able to change things, and we have multiple different groups that do different types of exhibitions and stuff. So it's not just a static thing that I can create a PowerPoint or a Word document for. But you know, ultimately I need something I can print out and cut up into individual little cards, right? And I don't want to have to pay someone to do it every time. So, I just, a year ago I already had a little Python script that I used to do this, and it worked fine, but it was really clunky, and every time I wanted to change everything, it was a nightmare. So a year ago, I tried to get it to rebuild this, to try to get an agent to rebuild it, which it did, but I just couldn't get it to produce labels that were formatted properly. It was always, you know, logos overlapping text or stuff going off the edge of the page, or you know, the borders of the labels not fitting into the, and not the right amount of labels on page, all sorts of formatting things, right? So it got all the information and everything on there, it just hadn't formatted it properly. And I was like, well, fix it. The logo's in the wrong place. And so it would just go through and say, right, I've moved the logo 5 pixels. And I'm like, right, but that's not what I need. I need it to be in the middle or something, right? And it just couldn't get it right because it wasn't able to look at the output, which is always a PDF, right? And so I just gave up. It's there, the code, I've still got it, and I looked at it, and it's just not very good. And it was just never the twain shall meet here, because it just simply couldn't understand what I said, what I meant when I was talking about visual problems. Whereas literally a week or two ago, I had it rebuild it again, because I've got a lot of exhibitions coming up this year. And it just did it. And so, yes, I got a sort of first pass where it produced some labels where the border wasn't resized properly. And I went, can you go and have a look at the border? It's not working. And it just went and did. And it went, oh, yeah, I see what the problem is. And fixed it. Done. Right? And then I'm like, can you make sure that doesn't, you know, that's something that it looks at every time. And then I've built a skill around it. So there's some scripts that do the actual build. And then there's a skill to say, you know, here's how you build it, but then please check your output. And here's the things to check, right? And so now every time I just go in there and say, okay, can I get some labels, use this spreadsheet, and use this, you know, pre-built template for the look and feel, and it just does it, and then it checks its stuff, and if it's wrong, it fixes it, right? It will notice if the border is off, right? And so this is sort of a just another version of the same thing. Like a year ago, that you know, agents weren't really able to produce PowerPoints like this and things, PDFs like that, because they couldn't really check their stuff, their output, yeah. Whereas now they can, and that's where the real game changer is here, right? Because I think, you know, in terms of the content, could you have got a year ago, could I have got an agent to say, here's a markdown file that tells you what you should have on each slide, right? With these bullet points, and maybe put these in a box or something. Yes, I think it would have done a decent job, right? But I would have still had to build the presentation for myself, which is in itself a fiddly pile of crap to have to do. Whereas now it just did it, right? And that's very recent. Like, it's the last sort of six to 9 months.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Like you say, it's the skill that it has now of being able to see its output. And I remember when I first was testing LLMs to write tests, they write all sorts of outlandish stuff, and they, at the time, they weren't able to run them, and so the testing was always rubbish, and then suddenly it got loads better almost overnight, because suddenly they introduced into the, you know, the harness that, oh, actually now it can run code and test it. So it write tests, run them, they'd all fail. So what's it doing? Oh, it says, well, you're trying to do this, write these tests, you've written these, they've all failed, improve. You know, loops around 5 times, you come back with your tests and they all work. So, and this is exactly the same. You can produce a PowerPoint and think, oh, it looks good. But if you can't see it, you can't justify it. And now they suddenly can see them and go, oh, well, that's, you know, and let's compare that with what a good one should look like. Oh, look, it's no good, but let's start moving it all around. I think that has made, you know, a massive difference, like you say, in improving the output. And what I love about this idea of the improved output, and now we've all got it, is suddenly that's not the differentiator anymore. The differentiator is the actual content of the of what you're saying, of the presentation or the document, because it's doing equally well in documents and spreadsheets. Again, it's that sort of 70% level that I've seen anyway. It's going to produce something, it's going to be in the ballpark of where you want, and the devil's going to be in the detail. But if you don't, especially internally in a company, if you don't mind that detail in terms of sort of presentation and stuff being a bit ragged, or the fact that all presentations are now really good, then you can iterate quickly, get something knocked up. And if you don't mind discussing with someone and you'll accept that you're discussing an AI output from a folder, then you can then use that iteration to go, well, I'm not worried about how this looks. What I want to get to is the key points that we need to discuss, of which there is agreement or disagreement. And then, that means we should now look at this. Right, let's go into the next iteration. So I think one of the, if you're a smart company, one of the outputs of this, or one of the ways forward, is you move away. You can do that more many presentations. So rather than pushing perfection from a presentation point of view, you can move much more to quickly iterating around the actual content, the bits it's missing, the bits you want to add in, the point of view you hadn't considered, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that becomes really powerful. So rather than produce something, take a few weeks to get everyone together and then all mull it over, you can start to do that much, much quicker.
Yeah. I did this presentation that we've focused on as just a quick experiment, literally an hour before we started recording. I like to do things like this for this podcast, and it keeps things fresh and it's a nice talking point. And so did I really mean to make a presentation using only one line of prompt? No, I didn't. It was an experiment. It was a little gimmicky thing that I did so that, we could talk about something on this episode that was, almost like real time, right? And to prove a point, right? One way or the other, because if it had come out terrible, we would have spent the last, 50-odd minutes talking about how terrible it was and, we're not where we thought we were, right? So, yeah. But it came out well. But, were I really seriously producing this presentation for this meeting, I would not have just written one line. I certainly wouldn't have stopped at that, right? And so am I suggesting that I only now have to do one line of prompt and some quality control to get a presentation done for a meeting? No, I would have probably opened up a markdown file. I would have put down my thoughts about what I thought should be in there. I would have pointed it towards the right places to get the right assets. I would have done more upfront work to get this done, and then I would have iterated. Right, I wouldn't have shown you this version and gone, well, we're almost there, Gov. I would have probably iterated it a couple of times. Now, while I was saying that, I think my point was that, the work hasn't completely gone away, right? I would have obviously done more here, right? Actually, there's a sort of an inflection point there where, yes, I would have done more, but how much more, but there's more effort here than it would seem if you just listen to what we were saying. But while I was saying that just then, I was like, yeah, but I probably shouldn't, right? Because had I gone in there, opened up a markdown and put my thoughts down, it might have given me what I wanted, but I'm not sure that this isn't what I want. What I've already got. Do you see what I'm saying? And yeah. So actually, maybe the right way to do it is simply to start off with a one-liner going, well, just tell me what you think should be done, right? And so I guess the point there in the process really isn't lots of upfront presentation, because I think we already did that. We've got the folder with the everything you and me have done so far on this client. And that actually the right thing to do is to get the model to tell me what it thinks we should do and work from there. Because would I have got this had I have put more upfront effort in? I might have got something worse. You know what I'm saying? So there's a real sort of, I think there's an art here, right, that sort of comes with knowing how the models work, what models you're using in the agent. I mean, not in depth, right, but I know what to expect with the warp terminal harness agent. And, you know, I sort of know which direction I'm pointing in. But outside of that, how much upfront work you do, I think that's one of the skills we're all going to learn, right? To sort of intuit where that inflection point is. And it's interesting because it sort of puts the complication of this stuff at the other end of the process, right? Whereas we started off talking about the fact that it's really easy to overthink and to over-tweak a deck that you're only going to get to slide 3 before Big Boss derails it because you wrote something on there that triggers him, right? And we've been in that meeting many times. Getting good enough earlier on might well short-circuit that, right? Because you're not so invested, you know. Yes. You're not so caught up in it, and actually doing less presentation specific research. Because I'm certainly not saying we should have done less research on the client. If anything, more, right? But I think with this particular example, we are where we are. Actually, I'm very comfortable with that, right? So I'm at the point where producing this presentation now is appropriate. And actually, the more I think about it, the more I think, well, doing exactly what I did was the right thing to do, given where we're at. And that actually this presentation is probably better than what I would have conceived. I would have made it look nicer. That's about it.
And I think this reflects, you know, how code has changed over the years, in that when you have to handcraft it and getting it compiled and getting it run, you know, are all long, long steps, then you take an engineering approach of write first time. So I'm going to write out my code on a sheet. I'm going to make sure that all looks good. It's nice and neat. You know, put it into my punch cards, got to make sure they're good. You know, so each step you don't want to iterate, because the cost of iterating is high. And so to, you know, produce your punch cards, you feed them into the machine. Oh, it's all wrong. It's not working. To go back around that loop is heavy and expensive in terms of time. And then, you know, fast forward to, you know, modern IDEs, you know, write 3 lines of code, press execute, and it executes it there and then. I mean, you know, so now it's so cheap that actually now we'll get an LLM to write the code and just see what it does. Oh, yeah, it's coming out with this. And, oh, it's wrong, change it, you know. And so you iterate very quickly. It's very cheap. And you're much less invested in what's produced, because, you know, it could change 20 times in the next hour. And if you get used to that way of working, I think it's actually very positive. And I agree with you, is why start with, you know, lots of research for yourself and worrying about what the presentation should look like? Why not knock one out, use it as a discussion point? If you get to slide 3 and you're derailed, then you've just saved yourself a ton of time. But obviously you're running the risk, depending on what sort of meeting you're in, that you could, you know, that might be your one and only chance, in which case not good. But if you can create an environment around you, you know, a company environment that says, you know, well, let everyone's bringing their first views here. Let's not be attached to them. Let's be critical and positive and work out how we can move forward. If you can instill that as a culture, then you're going to iterate quickly and bring the next one to the party much, much quicker at no, you know, personal reputational loss, which is probably the key. And if you could do that, then I think these tools, you know, really, really help that.
I think to sort of finish that loop off, there is also the question of Well, cool. I produced this. I think the output is good, but this is only the second PowerPoint presentation I've ever seen, right? So, you know, because I'm not very experienced, and therefore I sort of have to go with what the model told me and what the agent produced. So, yeah, let's go with that, right? And the same with coding, right? Like, this looks legit. This looks like it works. You know, I'm an experienced developer. I take a look at it and go, well, of course it works, but it's riddled with bloody, you know, security holes or something, or it's engineered really badly, right? And this sort of the skills gap that's possibly going to emerge there also exists here. How do I know that this is a good presentation? Because I've seen fucking hundreds, right? Yeah. And I might not be a genius here, but I think anyone who's been working around the corporate environment for a few years, especially in places like consultancies and agencies that are just driven by PowerPoint, you know, you might not be able to produce a perfect presentation, but you know a good one when you see one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think there is still a little bit of a problem that's going to start emerging here with that, you know, we've talked about before that as things get more homogenous and people have less and less experience with the range of possibilities, that actually we get into a huge sort of business monoculture, but across businesses. And I think some of the best PowerPoint presentations I've ever seen are not the ones that conform to a very standard model, which is exactly what this is. But I actually think, you know, a lot of people can be quite dismissive of slides as a form of communication, but I think they can be an art, right? And I think being able to tell a story and communicate information in a compelling and consumable way, especially to sort of a larger audience, you know, using slides like this, I think the form itself is interesting and powerful. And I think that the doing it well is an art. And I don't think that this or any presentation that an LLM's likely to produce is going to be one of those presentations you see and you want to applaud it, right? But, you know, and given how how cynical I am about sort of corporate culture as an individual, right? My somewhat an artist as well. I've got a certain reverence for PowerPoint, right? And I'm quite picky, right? And so, I the fact that this output didn't offend me, in itself is quite a feat. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm looking at this going, it's decent, but it is very bog standard. It's very Bob Ross, you know what I mean? But it's cool, and that's fine. And I'm not knocking that. But what I haven't got is that TED presentation that's going to blow someone's socks off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And this is my whole point is, you know, you raise the bar. So everything's slightly above average, but you are not going to, well, I've seen no evidence yet that you're not going to jump out of that. You're not going to have that creative leap because that's not what the technology is there for. But the technology is to get everyone up to doing what is currently seen as good. And if everyone's good, how do you get the exceptional? Well, you don't just do good better. You do to a point, and then at some point, something, you know, someone makes a jump, a leap, you know, some creative discovery and tries it, and bang, that becomes, you know, the big leap, and then everyone moves over to that version. But yeah, I don't think exactly that. You're not going to get the top 1% coming out of this, but you are going to drag up your bottom 15%, and in corporates, that's always, you know, that's always worth it. But I think you still got to have, as you say, you got to have people deliberately pushing forward, deliberately pushing the boundaries of, you know, communication or whatever, because these machines, I don't see, unless a human notices it, you know, off some random, stochastic building something out, which is non-standard, you know, and I've seen this just this week, you know, completely go off on one, make a bunch of stuff up, and suddenly go, oh, well, actually, although I know that's all wrong, that's actually a good way to do it, you know, and then say, yes, I accept that, and then bang, you're in. But apart from that, they're not going to come up with the new way of doing things.
So we're bleeding into the wider conversation. We've around AI and creativity. We have an episode a few episodes back about AI and creativity. And if you want to listen to my other podcast, it's called Art Against Mental Illness. And I talk about AI and creativity and that a lot. But, you know, in my opinion, AIs can't be creative. They, or at least not without a human very heavily in the loop. And we're touching on exactly the same themes here when we talk about this, is that, you know, you're not going to get that intuitive leap that's going to produce that real blinder by using the AI alone. They're just not capable of it. They'll produce really solid, really bog standard stuff. And I'm comfortable with that. And it does mean that those people who produce those real blinders are not out of a job.
Yes.
I did not expect to find myself soliloquizing about the wonder and beauty of PowerPoint presentations, but we never know how these conversations are going to go. And I'm comfortable with that. I'm happy with this. That I can take that view. Maybe I've lost the plot. Maybe I'm losing. I used to go and eat my bread and go and paint some, you know, abstract landscapes and cleanse myself.
Yes, absolutely. And three Hail Marys.
Yes, indeed.
Right,
okay, well, let's leave it there.
Yeah, good roundup today. And we'll be back next time.
Perhaps we'll do something different.
Perhaps. Perhaps not.
Perhaps. Watch this space. We'll see you all again soon.
Yep. Cheers.
The confusion matrix.